Hello and welcome to the Texas Tribune Tribcast for the first week of April. I'm reporter Elise Hugh, joined by CEO and editor-in-chief Evan Smith.
Hello, Elise.
Managing editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
And Ben Philpott of the Tribune and KUT News.
Hello.
The whole gang's back, and this week we're going to talk about Obama's upcoming visit to Texas, KBH's donors and where they landed, the debate weight, and whether the corruption argument will move voters this fall. Evan, let's start with you.
Well, it's by now not any big surprised that Democrats around the country are reluctant to campaign with the president, given that his approval rating is down around his ankles. And we had the spectacle this last week in Georgia of the president arriving in Atlanta to find that the Republican governor, outgoing Sonny Perdue, greeted him at the airport. But the Democratic nominee, Roy Barnes, former governor, was as far away as he conceivably could have been from the president because the president is a liability in Georgia. Well, we have now on August 9th, Monday, a series of fundraisers that President Obama is doing in Texas, one in Austin and one in Houston, and Bill White will be, you know, at the North Pole on previously scheduled business those days. And of course, the Republicans are making enormous hay of the fact that in the invitation for the fundraiser, the White House or the White House political operation referenced Bill White by name, saying, you know, we're going to raise money in Texas and help Bill White become elected governor. And they're saying this shows a linkage between White and Obama. If they can't get their faces together in a frame, then they can get their names together in an ad. Apparently, according to the Republicans, there was as well an exchange between Mayor White, when he was Mayor White rather than Candidate White, and Valerie Jarrett, the president's close confidant, about whether some of the stimulus dollars could flow from Washington to Houston or to Texas. The White campaign is not, or at least I've not read a response by the White campaign so far to this charge, but the Republicans and the Perry campaign specifically are making hay of this. Bottom line, Obama continues to be an issue for White. And I'm just curious to know from the group's perspective, what would you do if you were White in this case, since the day is upon us and Monday is coming?
It's death by association. This is one of those things where, you know, if I've got an opponent, I want to associate my opponent with something or someone who is unpopular. And it is the fate of American presidents in their midterm elections to be the something unpopular. I mean, this happened to Reagan in 82.
It happened to Bush in 06, right?
It happened to Bush in 06. It happened to Clinton famously in 94. You know, you run away from the incumbent if the incumbent's not doing so well. If the incumbent is doing well, everybody runs to them. You know, I don't know if voters buy this or not. It can't help Bill White in Texas or any Democrat in Texas for someone to say, that's my opponent. He's associated with the Democrats. The leader of the Democratic Party is Obama. Obama's unpopular in Texas. Therefore, you shouldn't like my opponent. I mean, that's a pretty easy formula.
White's response to the questions about this last week, he was peppered with questions about this at a press conference in Austin last Friday, and he basically said, if Obama really needs to talk to me, he can call me. I've talked to him on the phone numerous times. You know, if it's a policy matter, we'll talk, but there's no reason, I'm running for governor of Texas, there's no reason for me to need to appear with him.
And in White's defense, Ben, it wasn't as if White was particularly close to Obama. The Democratic president who was unpopular in Texas, who White was close to, was Clinton.
Well, isn't it, actually worked in his White House. Isn't it, to quote you, kind of just crap anyway?
What, the whole question? Well,
Ben's just trying to work crap into every single podcast. From now,
we love to quote Evan on this. Well, I mean, it's
that's an Episcopalian form of really, really cursing.
That's right.
Yeah. Don't get me really mad. I may use dang it.
I can argue that.
But it just seems to me that it is. Who on the Republican side that was going to... So Republicans or conservatives that were going to vote for Perry anyway don't like Obama. The fact that now White is associated with Obama or is trying to be associated with or whatever with Obama doesn't appear that it's going to move them any further to the right.
You make an interesting point. In other words, the universe of people who are on the fence about voting for White, how many people is that actually who would be swayed by White's association with Obama up or down? So because you made the decision not to associate yourself with the president, now I'm going to vote for you. Many of the people who are mad at Obama were people who are not going to vote for White anyway.
Both of these guys are playing for independents. And independents are, you know, I mean, it's not a huge number, but it's a number. And, you know, it's an otherwise close race. Let's say it's 9 points. That's what most of the polls have been showing. If you sway some independents and you get a couple of bounces, this is a competitive race. And so you have to play every single angle, every single edge. You know, 15 minutes ago in political time, the Democrats were pointing fingers at anybody who'd ever had a coffee with Tom DeLay, right? I mean, this is the way of things.
Well, for that matter, the Democrats were pointing fingers at Tom Schieffer, the base Democrats, for having played footsie with George Bush.
That's right.
Well,
that's exactly
it right. Seems to me that this is just, in terms of a close race and what can help in a close race, it seems like this is something that will drum up support among the grassroots. It'll continue their anger on, you know, whatever side of the fence you want to be on. It'll continue their anger and excitement about this coming election. You know, this is another thing to remember, you know, remember Obama as they're charging up the hill.
Right. Well, if we have time, Elise, the one question I want to also ask since we last gathered is the fact that Chris Cillizza of the Washington Post, who is a respected and nonpartisan, he's not an in-the-tank guy.
Right.
He decided to upgrade the Texas governor's race to competitive.
I think he was basing that on money. Bill White raised the same money Perry did, came out of the mid-year reports with $3 million more in the bank than Perry did. And, you know, $3 million, you know, we talked about this a little bit last week, but $3 million is a lot of money everywhere but Texas. I mean, $3 million in Texas is almost 2 weeks of television. $3 million in North Dakota is a whole contest.
Right. Right.
So when you look at a $3 million difference, that's a persuasive difference. So, Most of the polls have it at nine.
The perception out of state is interesting versus the perception in state, because I think out of state, people just look at these raw numbers and don't look at what's behind them.
And to the extent that these guys raise money out of state, Perry is in California this week while Obama's in Texas. To the extent that these guys raise
what's
money
Perry doing in California, raising money?
Raising money, yeah. I mean, you know, that's
with his close friend Schwarzenegger?
He will not be attending the Asian American Journalists Association.
Well, I think he's avoiding Schwarzenegger. This is actually interesting. He's made a point of dissing Schwarzenegger at all of the RGA, the Republican Governors Association meetings. It's like everybody's got somebody to stiff arm here.
And Schwarzenegger did not attend the one that was in Texas, the meeting that was
in Texas. That's exactly right. So.
Well, Ross, let's stay on money. We want to talk about where Kay Bailey Hutchison's donors went, if they went anywhere between Perry and White.
My favorite conversation this week, I talked to Kelly Frels, who's a attorney in Houston, and I said, you know, I've got you on the list here, giving money to Kay Hutchison and giving money to Bill White. And he said, yeah, I was actually giving money to both of them before the primary. And I said, so if Kay had won, what were you going to do on March 3rd? And he said, I don't have to answer that. what happened to most of these people is that they gave money to – everybody on our list gave money to Hutchison. That was sort of the baseline.
And it was about $20 million.
Yeah. And then if you count the money, the $8 million she transferred from her Senate account, it's about $22, $24 million. And then, you know, sort of where do they go after she loses the primary? A bunch of them haven't gone anywhere. Dick Moncrief in Fort Worth gave Hutchison $172,000. He hasn't landed yet. Mike Myers in Dallas, a real estate guy, rather a banker in Dallas.
For whom the practice fields are famously named.
Right.
At UT.
$119,000 right. to
K. Not Wayne's World Mike Myers.
Right, right.
The other Mike Myers.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Margaret Crow, you know, same thing. But a lot of these people have landed, you know. John Now in Houston, the Eagle distributing guy, he was a big Perry guy and then switched and became Hutchison's, correct me if I'm wrong, either chairman or co-chairman of her state campaign.
Right, campaign.
He's now with Perry. He's giving money to Perry. His wife is giving money to White. So, you know, either way you get your dog back, right? So, you know, it's just interesting the way these guys are landing. In total, Perry's gotten roughly $1 million from people in this last period, since the primary in March, gotten roughly $1 million from people who initially gave to Hutchison. White has gotten around $600,000 from people who initially gave to Hutchison.
If you're the White campaign, do you think that's good news, that there are so many people who gave money to Hutchison who have not yet committed, and therefore that means maybe they really are not that enthusiastic about switching back to Perry, and so they're persuadable? Or is that just people saying, well, I'm a Republican, and I was, you know, I was happy to get my
decay. And I hand that list to my fundraiser and say, go.
If you're White or if you're Perry.
Well,
if you're
both of you, actually. But, I mean, if you're White, these are people who were going to go with Hutchison and can't bring themselves to go with Perry. That's an undecided voter.
Or haven't brought themselves yet to go with Perry.
Well, if they're not on the – yeah, right. If they haven't written a check, they're open. If they haven't written a check, call them. And, in fact, a lot of the people who have landed – Pete Winstead, the
Austin
founder,
lawyer,
founder
Winstead,
of Winstead
PC, Winstead the law
PC,
firm, yeah.
Was with Hutchison and said he called James Huffines with the Perry campaign the morning after and said, "Hey, I'm with you guys now." So some of them jump right in. Some of them are persuadables, and you know, Pete said, "You know, there's some headbanging going on."
And then some of them were with White all along because they're from Houston and they're business leaders, and he was part of the, you know, supportive of the business community.
Yeah, not all of this is politics.
Anyway,
I mean, you know, it's all politics, but not all of this is politics. Some of this is business. Some of this is friendship. You know, a lot of these people have known all three of these candidates for years and years and years. And, you know, so to some extent, they're choosing from among their friends. And there'll be some people who lock out just because, you know,
Well, to Elise's, I think, but Elise's point, Ben, is interesting because I remember in 2002 you had the phenomenon of both former Dallas Mayor Ron Kirk and former Austin Mayor Kirk Watson running statewide as Democrats after serving as nonpartisan mayors of their cities and therefore enjoying the support of Republicans and Democrats in the business community as mayor. And they always thought, or one imagines they always thought, well, when I run statewide, those supporters who were with me as mayor will transfer and be with me as a statewide candidate. But the minute you run as a statewide candidate as a Democrat, a lot of those Republican folks jump off. And both Kirk Watson and Ron Kirk saw that a lot of the people who supported them as mayor did not support them statewide. And the question has been, to Elise's point, would a lot of the people who supported Bill White as mayor, nonpartisan, stay with him when he runs as a partisan candidate statewide?
You know, I mean, that is tricky because you've got so many. I mean, if you're in big business, you have to go through a state agency. Every state agency is controlled by a governor who's been in charge for 10 years and has his claws, or not claws, his appointees.
His
finely manicured talons.
Exactly. At every agency head. But obviously this has been kind of the Bill White or the Democrats' strategy, hope, dream. Ever since this race started, is that you would have a bloody primary and that Kay Bailey Hutchison supporters would either A, give to White and vote for White, or B, give to no one and vote for no one. And either way, it's a win for White.
You know, and White was a mayor with a lot of Republican support, you know, as Watson was, as Kirk was in their cities. And so a lot of these people are looking at this and the Democrat-Republican thing is not at the top of their decision list. It's, you know, I know this one, I've worked with him or her, I like him or her, that's where I'm going.
And there's always the late train. That's the great phenomenon,
well, that's
maybe
right,
not
yeah.
just of Texas politics, but of politics, which is, you know, forgiveness is always.
This is the period after the election and before the right. finance shutoff when people can come in and say, I still love you, and make a contribution to the candidate who won.
Yeah. People have long memories, but that memory is often erased partly, if not entirely, by a check.
It's the whole business of forgive and remember.
Right.
Right.
Ben, before we get to Labor Day, I know you wanted to hit on the ongoing debate weight.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of the stuff that we bring up every week, we kind of end it all with, it would be interesting if the candidates would actually come together and maybe talk about this stuff. I mean, even the ethics stuff that we're going to get to in just a second. KUT got a couple of emails this week from people saying, hey, you know, I was looking over your website and I can't find any information on when there's going to be a debate. Can you please tell me where it is on
Neither
your website?
Neither can we.
All I get is this cricket sound. It's very,
right. And it was great to,
where
you know,
is that on the site?
It was great to write that email back saying, well, you know what? Here's the thing. I just wonder now, as we're getting deeper into the summer, coming closer to people setting their schedules. I mean, I don't know how long it's going to take to come up with a debate. Maybe just a week. All of a sudden, second week of October, they'll have a meeting, and the third week of October, we'll have a debate. But it seems like as we're getting closer and closer, surely something's going to.
And are we only going to have one debate? Are there going to be multiple debates?
Right.
I bet we end up with one. I got to give a shout out here to the Coronado High School Thunderbirds in El Paso, Texas, high school civics class. Has invited both the candidates to debate. This is my high school, I got to say.
You buried the lead, Ross.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, but this high school asked for this debate. I thought it was really interesting. White immediately accepted, and Perry's hanging back. But, you know, it would be funny if they had one debate and it was.
Don't you think White's strategy will be to accept every single debate that
Sure, and he has, in fact. You know, in fact, if you go to White's website, there's a list of all the debates he's accepted.
I don't think, and Perry hasn't even sat down for a long, extended on-camera interview all year, actually, because we were trying to get him to talk with you. When you talked with him for Newsweek, we tried to get him on camera to
Yeah, they didn't want to do it on video. Ben got the thing recorded on audio, but I'm not aware of another interview at that length that Perry has done. And of course, we have a standing invitation in with Mark Miner to have the governor as part of the Triple Live series, and I'm optimistic that we're going to get him in the fall, but you're exactly right. And in some ways, it's not in Perry's interest to be in front of the camera any more than he has to be, because he's got the ball and he can take a knee.
And right. White knows right. that. And when White was last asked about the debate, he said something about how, you know, he doesn't want to have any unscripted moments, any more act of God statements as he made about the right. BP oil spill. And so, you know.
Yeah, that was his line at the Democratic convention, is he doesn't expect Perry to debate because he says his, quote, handlers won't let him have moments like that, or don't want him to have that chance to have a moment like an act of God.
And if you think back to the Republican primary debates, the first one against Medina and Kay, where Medina really emerged, Perry was seen as very defensive and kind of I guess, aggressive towards the ladies. And so it'll be interesting, I think, to see these two guys. I didn't mean it aggressive that way.
We're just going to let that float out there.
I like your use of the ladies.
I get a pass because I am a lady. Well,
in his defense, he was being attacked brutally by both of the women involved in the debate.
Yes, but not in his defense. You're the governor of the state of Texas for 10 years. You're standing for re-election. You, like every other politician who's asking for the votes of people who, you know, will go up or down on your rehiring, are obligated to present yourself at least one time. I mean, I actually think this is a personal pet peeve that every single person who is an incumbent is obligated to debate his or her major party opponent at least once before the voters you're asking to support you. And if you refuse to debate, then the voters should summarily reject you because it's antithetical to democracy to not provide the voters an opportunity to see you side by side on a stage with the person you're running against. And I don't think it's too much to expect that the governor will debate once. I mean, I think the interesting question is it in his interest to debate more than once?
I don't think so.
And it probably is not.
The only two reasons for Perry to debate more than once are, A, if he thinks in a second or third debate he can put White away. Or B, if
that assumes that White wouldn't have been put away numerically.
I'm just saying. Right. I mean, if there's a way to put a spike in this thing, that's one reason to do it. The other reason to do it is if this becomes competitive and he gets into a position where they feel like going into a debate will improve their chances in a very competitive race. Right. But at this point, I mean, if you're being challenged and you've got a guy running 9 points behind you, and you know, throwing spears at you.
Why give him
the opportunity to do that on television?
Give him the venue.
Right.
So the last tape of it, we
did this really interesting thing a while back, still on our website, you know, pulling all of the debate sort of histories together. And it's interesting. The one time they didn't debate was an open seat. Ann Richards and Clayton Williams didn't debate but appeared sort of in 10-minute segments on, I think it was Channel 8 in Dallas, wasn't it, WFAA?
It was a satellite debate or whatever.
It was sort of a satellite debate, right. And wasn't really ever side-by-side, because they finally get to the point where they just wouldn't go in the same room with each other.
Right.
So there is a little bit of a precedent for
that. Ultimately, it cost Clady that one of the times they were in the same room together, he refused to shake her hand, and the rest was history.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what makes races competitive. Specifically, I was having a conversation with Chris Bell's campaign manager in 2006 about the importance of the suburbs for both teams, Montgomery, Fort Bend, Denton, Collin counties. And he said that one of the interesting things about the suburbs is that voters there are especially sensitive to the appearance or perception of corruption, that the idea of corruption would move them. And so that got me thinking, you know, does that affect specifically folks like Linda Harper Brown and Irving? Does it affect the governor with regard to the land deal? Does it affect Bill White with regard to the BTEC deal?
Right.
Will that move voters as we head towards the fall? We know it worked for U.S. Democrats, for congressional Democrats in 2006, because the Republicans were mired in all sorts of things.
And how many Republican ads against incumbent Democrats around the country will feature the smiling face or the sleeping face of Charlie Rangel?
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, you know, you know that Charlie Rangel is basically the Mark Foley of this election.
He's got some serious problems.
Right. There was a series of press releases from both parties, sort of back and forth, the NRCC, the National Republican Congressional Committee, sending out emails against Chet Edwards and Ciro Rodriguez here in Texas on behalf of Kiko Canseco and Bill Flores, basically saying, you know, Chet and Ciro should give back the money they got from Charlie Rangel and the money they got from Maxine Waters. And then the return fire came from the DCCC, the counterpart on the Democratic side. Well, the Republicans should give back money they got from the Wiley brothers of Dallas, who've been popped with an SEC, who've been accused of some violations of corporate finance law. And, you know, so this is kind of what we were talking about at the beginning. You know, associate your opponent with something that stinks, right? So in Perry's case, it's associate White with Obama. In this case, it's, you know, dirty money.
But to Elise's point, Ben, does anybody actually out there care? Are voters going to make a decision not to support Perry? They were otherwise for Perry, but now this issue of the land deal that the Dallas Morning News raised last Sunday, now that's suddenly an impetus not to support, the governor. Or is the Bill White stuff going to get traction so that now White's not going to get supported by these guys?
Well, I will say that if you just listen to what people say at Tea Party rallies, it certainly should. I mean, the Tea Party rally people are anti-incumbent mostly, no, I don't know about mostly, but a lot of it is because of they feel that the longtime incumbents have become corrupt. They're not actually looking out for the people that voted them in. They're looking out for their own special interests. Mm-hmm. So if you listen to their, not rhetoric, but if you listen to what they say at these events, it absolutely should be something that comes into play because they're talking about it all the time. Now,
and the white campaign is aware of that, clearly, because the white campaign has pivoted over to a tagline on its ads that is, Bill White, he's in it for Texas.
Right.
The implication being Rick Perry's in it for Rick Perry.
Right.
White people are trying to make that point of differentiation.
If you watch the attack ads on the Democratic side, most of them are coming from a group called Back to Basics.
This is the Steve Mostyn et al. Right.
Well, Steve Mostyn gave 99% of the money, and some other guys gave $1 each. So Steve Mostyn, but
it's a small et al.
They're running these ads that sort of play on the idea that, you know, Perry's been here too long, Perry's gone native, Perry's got a fancy mansion, Perry's got a land deal. They're playing on exactly this.
I just wonder, though, if it, number one, if it matters because it's the traditional media that reports on things like this, and a lot of...
And the traditional media have less impact.
On the Tea Party, right. I would say especially.
Well, they're viewed with skepticism. Yes. I mean, not even just less impact. It's a net negative to have the traditional... For the traditional media to attack you, that's actually seen in the eyes of many people supporting, at least right. on the Perry side. That's a good thing, actually. Right.
Well, I mean, the 2006 Republican Convention... 2008 Republican Convention, there was a person walking around with a sign that said, waterboard the media. So,
yikes.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where this feeling... So I don't know if it's ever going to translate over in...
Look, the Dallas News story was a good old-fashioned newspaper story that raised a lot of questions. But the ball's got to move further down the field for this to be a live issue in the campaign, doesn't
it? Well, yeah,
it?
I mean...
There has to be more.
The textbook way this works, and I still think this is true to a great extent, is, you know, a piece of information comes out or is well-documented, as in the Morning News story was, you know, they dotted the I's, they crossed the T's. It was really well-put-together story. And, you know, the allegation basically was that Perry's political friends sold him a piece of land for less than it was worth and later bought it for more than it was worth.
Less than it was worth, according to the Morning News' appraiser.
Right.
We should say
right.
that.
Well, I mean, but this is the allegation. Right. So what happens now is all up to Perry's opponents and to Perry himself, is how this plays with the public. You know, most of the public probably didn't see the story. If they did see the story, probably didn't read it. Who puts legs on it? The White campaign?
Just completely depressing everybody in this room.
Well, I'm just saying.
Oh,
I mean, you know, it's the whole state of Texas.
My baby is so ugly.
There's 24 million people. They don't all read the Dallas Morning News. That's just how it works. It, you know, but so the question is,
you'll get a call from Jim Maroney.
How and whether if he's got 24 million readers, he has no problem. The question is how this thing gets legs on it. Does the White campaign present it, or does Back to Basics or somebody on behalf of the White campaign present it in a way that voters go, wait a minute, tell me a little bit more about that? Does the Perry campaign offer a defense that voters say, okay, never mind about that, but tell me more about Bill White's BTEC deal?
Right, I mean, or the Frontera recently.
Which one fits better on the
other interesting thing is that the Dallas News did a series of stories one Sunday and then another Sunday, one about White, one about Perry, neither one flattering.
Right.
The White one alleged that White profited from an investment that he claimed he hadn't gotten any profits from. It sort of made a flurry for like a day, and then it went away.
Right.
The Perry one is taking longer to go away. But that doesn't mean it's going to have any legs in the long term.
Right.
And I think you're right. Something else has to happen.
And it doesn't mean it's an issue. I mean, sometimes you get these things and you go, oh, that sounds really bad. And then voters sort of, you know, say, that's not really what I'm voting on.
Don't really care.
You know, that's really interesting.
Give me a macaca moment. Well, that will actually get me to.
It has to be a galvanizing scandal. Yeah, Mark Foley, everybody remembers.
This is really interesting. I don't have a job. There's that version of a voter.
Right.
This is really interesting. But, you know, look over there, you know, like the macaca moment. I mean, you know, you don't know what's going to bounce.
Yeah, and if the economy of Texas is good and most people in Texas feel good about the future of the state from a policy standpoint, from an economic standpoint, from a job standpoint, what these guys did or did not do, as alleged by the evil traditional media, is going to seem a lot less important in the end.
Well, what you just said is sort of an interesting thing. If the economy improves, that accrues to incumbents. That's good for Perry, right?
Right.
It's good for Obama and sort of takes the sting out of that, and the Democrats are like, you know, this could change the table. But it's also good for Perry because he'll say, see?
Yeah.
I mean, it's an interesting that sort of balance. Is Perry's way, I think.
I mean, and also the degree to which people are or are not willing to attach significance to these ratings of things that come out. There was a flurry of stuff about where Texas ranks adults with high school diplomas versus other states. Again, you had a story for half a day about how Texas is pretty far down among all states, and then it went away. I mean, really, at the end of the day, pocketbook issues matter more.
Right.
That brings us to the end of the Dump on the Media Tribcast. On behalf of Evan.
Another opportunity for Ben to say crap.
And another opportunity for Ben.
Darn it.
On behalf of Evan, Ben, and Ross, I'm Elise. Thank you for listening.